हरि ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
For some reason, our machineries are not here. Those who are keen to engage in deep discussions on esoteric conclusions of the scriptures should certainly delve into the philosophy of the Vedanta Sutra. The point to be emphasized is that a well-versed Vedanta philosopher is not a philosopher in the line of Shankara, but is actually a Vaishnava spiritual preceptor, a liberated soul. According to the Vedas and the sages, the five gross elements are earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Material nature is produced from a combination of false ego, ahankara, the ingredients of the material energy, mahatattva, the cause of the mahatattva, prakriti. There are five knowledge-gathering senses and five working senses. The mind is the internal sense, the sixth knowledge-gathering sense. Form, taste, smell, touch, and sound are the five sense objects. Okay, so you have the gross and subtle elements, right? So earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. So that's eight. Then you have the five senses, right? The sense objects. Then the what is it? Then the sense, the self, right? So that's 15. So 15 is 23. Then you have polluted consciousness. Right, so that you get your 24 elements, like that. Does that make sense? Okay. So then, with that, then the whole material creation is made. It's made out of that only. There's nothing else. We have already enumerated these material ingredients in our description of the Shankya philosophy of the atheist Kapila. The kshetra, or field, is a combination of the 24 ingredients mentioned above. When these 24 ingredients interact, the result is the transformation of material energy, which gives rise to the gross material body, comprised of five gross elements, pancha mahabhuta, as a result of material desires, hate, enjoyment, lamentation, and so on. So in other words, remember we were discussing before about the field and the knower of the field, right? So this is an important element. So this knower that means the field itself, then you have to be able to define. So it's these 24 elements. So when these 24 elements are engaged or interact with each other, then there's a transformation in these elements of these 24 elements. That produces all the different results of this material world. Right? It means one thing then produces another. One, if you take these elements, combine them together, you get something else, right? You go into the kitchen, you have portals, you have potatoes, you know, you have paneer, you have ghee. You know, they combine together, you get something else, right? It's still made out of the same ingredients, but it ends up as something else. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on, is that the field is being operated. The field is the interaction between the elements of the field. That's what makes the action of this world. So the idea is, if you know this field, you understand the field, then you understand how everything is functioning. Right? It's a very simple thing, how it's functioning. Right? Can you all move forward? Okay. Does that make sense? Right. In other words, you have the knower of the field, which is the living entity, and you have the field itself. So the field itself then is made out of all this variety of dead matter. Action means creating interaction between these different elements, which then produces new combinations of these elements. Right? So then you know the field and the knower of the field. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Right? And then from that, as a result, then you get all these emotions and everything. Desires, hate, enjoyment, lamentation, so on. So as you change something, the desires, you get something new, it adds to the desires, right? Because it goes back to sambandha, like that. When you interact those things, then there'll be so many feelings, lamentation or this or that. That comes up from action. And then your enjoyment, that comes up from as a result. Right? Having gotten what you wanted, then you're happy. Not getting what you wanted, then you lament. Does that make sense? So by these elements interacting by your endeavors, then you're going to get various emotional experiences from that. Right? You'll get some observable result that's made out of those 24 elements, and you will get from these 24 elements, you'll get something observable, a transformation in these, and because of your connection with it, your polluted consciousness, you will also feel that you'll get some emotional reaction from it due to your attachment. Does that make sense? What will soon be discussed is that the kshetra gya is completely different from the kshetra and its transformations. But to properly understand the knowledge concerning the kshetra and the kshetra gya, one must first cultivate at least 20 good qualities listed in the Bhagavad Gita, 13.8 through 12. It's 13.8. I always thought it was 13.1. 13.8. So which is the one where it starts out with this big shloka and it's just the first one?
16.
And what is that discussing?
The qualities of the body.
Oh, okay. So 13.8 through 12. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, sense control, self-control, renunciation of objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasure and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. Now, this is God's opinion. So he's saying anything else other than this is ignorance. So if it's not based on this, it's ignorance. So it doesn't matter if others think otherwise. You know, they're outnumbered, right? Like that. So God, you know, takes precedence here. So now we see here, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, and there will be, you know, the element of knowledge and study and instruction and all that. All the others are qualities required. Qualities, mentalities, ways of endeavoring, Does that make sense? So the attitude is the most important. So if the attitude is correct, right, and the proper knowledge is there, then the action will be correct. But if the knowledge is not proper, and the attitude, and we see of it, the attitude is the biggest of all this. Does that make sense? The attitude, the lifestyle. That's what knowledge is. Therefore, the Vedic system of education, the emphasis is on the character development, on the qualities. Because if you have that, then you are educated. If you don't have that, you're not educated. Krishna says it's ignorance. It may be a piece of paper, it may get you a job, it may get you money, but it's still ignorance. Maybe important, maybe useful, but ignorance. It should never be considered knowledge. Right? Knowledge means you have an understanding of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and other, you know, how you say, aspects of information of this world. But with these appropriate qualities to understand it in the proper way. If you don't have those understandings, we are not educated. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, here, humility, pridelessness. Someone has knowledge, they're very proud of it. Right? The modern academy is very proud of their knowledge. Right? Like that. So they don't have tolerance. Non-violence is not there because they're neglecting the soul. Tolerance, they don't tolerate other things. Simplicity, they try to make it very complex, otherwise it doesn't appeal to their intellectual brain. Approaching a bona fide spiritual master, no, they don't bother with that. They just deal with, you know, being in line with whoever's in the chair above them so that they don't get kicked out. They get tenure, and with time they can sit in that seat. Right, cleanliness, that's definitely not very popular in the modern academy. Steadiness, okay, maybe in the way of your job and that, yeah, a bit steady, they could have that. Self-control, maybe in some areas, maybe in not. They may be very well in their speech, and guiding their intelligence might be quite controlled, but we don't know if they're controlled in others. Renunciation to the objects of sense gratification, that's not in any way a prerequisite of the modern academy. Especially depending upon which aspect of the academy they take, like that. Absence of false ego, that's definitely, you wouldn't want to go there. Perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, that's lacking. Detachment's lacking. Freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, that's lacking. It's not saying that one is not a family person, it says one's not entangled with it. In other words, one is performing one's duties, one knows the rules, one is properly following it. So one is engaged in the activities of household life, but one's not entangled in it. So that will be absent. Right? Even-mindedness amid pleasure and unpleasant events, that's not, because that will be the personal character, that won't fall into the modern training in the academy. Constant and unalloyed devotion to me, that's definitely lacking. That's faith, you know, that's a big no-no. Aspiring to live in a solitary place, okay. A solitary place happens to be, you know, an office in the corner of the building somewhere, but it has a great prestige because that's where the head of the department sits. So it is a solitary place, but problem is it's based on false ego. Detachment from the general mass of people. Because they are socially dysfunctional, they generally tend to be. But it's not that that is their preference. Accepting the importance of self-realization, that's very individual. They can't actually do that as an academic. As an individual, they may be, but as an academic, they would not. And philosophical search for the absolute truth. They may claim it is, but they wouldn't want to find him. Right? That's all. They'll look all day, but, you know, if they find, ooh, that's bad. Then the search is over. Then you got to work. Persons bereft of these qualities are not eligible to discuss spiritual topics. The false logicians mistake the above-mentioned qualities, which are meant to lead the conditioned soul to liberation, for mundane qualities acquired as a result of transformations of the mind, such as lust, anger, and hate. But factually, the above-mentioned qualities represent spiritual knowledge. Even if one accepts the false logician's arguments that the qualities Lord Krishna enumerates in the Gita as prerequisites for absolute knowledge are mental transformations, still we cannot agree that these transformations are equivalent to such qualities as lust, greed, anger, and illusion, which result from gross ignorance. One kind of mental transformation drags the soul down to depravity, whereas the other redeems the soul from doom. Both disease and medicine are products of material nature, yet one pushes a man towards the jaws of death while the other saves him from destruction. So one must avoid becoming the laughing stock of society by accepting the foolish theory of jato mat tato pat, all ways lead to the truth, and on this basis professing that the medicine and the disease are one and the same. So in other words, different people will make a point is that, you know, you're saying all these things are necessary, but they're just transformations in material energy. So what's the difference between these transformations and some other transformations? So in that way, you can say, yes, they're all just transformations. But then the example is given. It's just like medicine and disease are transformations of these 24 elements also. So one then saves your life. The other one may kill you. So if you can't make that distinction, then that is not very intelligent. So Krishna says when you have these qualities, that's considered, you know, intelligent. Does that make sense? Right? So this idea that any path you take, it'll work. No. The path's given by God. If it's not approved of by God, it won't work. Right? There is one quality among the 20 qualities Krishna lists that is especially noteworthy. And that is Mayi, Chandanya Yogena Bhaktir Avyabhicharini, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, Krishna. The other qualities are required to cleanse the consciousness. Once the mirror of the mind is purified and the blazing fire of material existence extinguished, constant and unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna begins to appear on the horizon of the heart. The great saintly spiritual master Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung, "When will my mind become purified and detached from matter? Oh, when in that purified state will I be able to see the transcendental realm of Vrindavan?" Right, so it means all, generally when you have a list of qualities, there's going to be one that is essential, right? And all the others are there to enhance that. So this has a constant and unalloyed devotion to me, that then is the important principle, right? And all the others are to purify oneself so that one can come to that platform. Does that make sense? So he's giving an example. Narottam Das Thakur is saying that when will my mind become purified so that I will be able to actually, you know, be absorbed in the consciousness of service to Krishna in Vrindavan. Right? Does that make sense? It is interesting to note that once constant and unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna blossoms in the heart of a person, the other 19 qualities automatically manifest in him. As mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12, Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinchana sarver gunaish tatra samasate sura. All the demigods and their exalted qualities, such as religion, knowledge, and renunciation, become manifest in the body of one who has developed unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Right? So in other words, by devotional service, all these qualities will manifest. Right? We don't know of any way to manifest these qualities without actual this devotion to Krishna. Right? Or you can work on it from the Vedic paradigm, but we see is that it's not actually that solid. Right? There may be means of purification, but to be able to maintain them and cultivate them always, that's not guaranteed. Right? But devotional service will establish that. Therefore, if one is engaged in devotional service nicely, then all the good qualities will come. This idea that you don't engage in devotional service and you'll get all good qualities, that is for fools. That's foolishness. Right? That's not appropriate. Does this make sense? So everybody should be engaged in devotional service in some capacity. Okay. Then everything comes. Yeah? By patiently collecting 10, 20, 30 rupees daily, one will someday have 1,000,000 rupees. But if one comes upon 1,000,000 rupees all at once, one does not have to endeavor separately to collect 10, 20, or 30 rupees and waste valuable time. Similarly, when one develops unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna, all the other above-mentioned qualities automatically adorn that person without extra endeavor. On the other hand, one who leaves aside unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna and tries to cultivate the other 19 qualities separately may temporarily receive wealth and honor, but he will become unqualified for achieving the highest goal. The same verse of Srimad